going to call the House Committee on Healthcare to order and immediately leave to go next door to testify and hand it over, but a few announcements. We are going to be carrying over the following bills. 3407, 2020, 3345, and 3162 and 3260. Now, this puts us in a really bad place. It leaves us with more than 30 bills to do in three sessions. We do have the authority to carry over next Wednesday to the evening if we need to carry over to finish our work, but it's still going to be tough. If anybody has any amendments to any bills, you need to get them in, as I announced before, as soon as you possibly can, because pretty soon, if we don't have the amendments, and we don't have the fiscals on those amendments, those bills are going to die. So get the amendments ready as early as you can, so Tyler can get them down to fiscal and get us fiscals so we can move them.
Mr. Chair.
Today we're going to have a public hearing. Sorry? Yes.
Can you tell them if they're trying to kill the bill by faking amendment moves, that's not okay either?
Well, no. I mean, if we don't have amendments, we'll decide which amendment's the final amendment we have and get a fiscal on it. So, is Representative Widener here?
You already carried over this one, right?
Which one?
You mentioned that one, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Good. Open and then go back.
Yeah.
I just feel like I need to keep giving you something, you know. I'm eating your calories and saving you. You know this is for your behalf.
Tyler, where are you?
You just stepped out.
You know,
stuff away,
I can be caught.
Yeah,
you are.
Okay. Open a public hearing on...
Black Bear Whiter's here.
I saw. On which one? 3420? On House Bill 3420.
Okay.
You want to introduce the bill?
Oh. Yes. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3420. I have it somewhere.
Excuse me.
Requires the Oregon Health Authority investigate possibility of obtaining federal approval to increase co-payments to medical assistance program or implement other financial mechanism designed to encourage medical assistance recipients to take personal responsibility for their health care. It requires the authority to report 2014 regular session of Legislative Assembly. It requires the authority to reimburse physicians paid on fee-for-service basis at 110% of Medicare rate. The Dashboard Amendment delete provisions relating to co-payments and financial incentive and requires OHA to investigate possibility of obtaining federal approval to establish health savings accounts for medical assistance recipients designed to encourage patient engagement.
Jerry Widener.
Go ahead. Well, we're missing Chair Greenlick, but distinguished colleagues of the House Committee on Healthcare, thank you for your time and consideration of House Bill 3420-1 today is what I'm going to talk to you about because I ran into a few issues. My name is Rep. Jim Widener, and I represent House District 24, which includes both parts of Yamhill and Washington County. This bill is rather simple. It directs the Oregon Health Authority to investigate into the possibility of obtaining federal approval to establish health savings accounts for medical assistance recipients and is designed to encourage medical assistant recipients to take personal responsibility for their health and their own health care. Upon obtaining federal approval, we can work together to establish a framework for which Oregon would operate this type of health care program. According to Jessica Green, a PhD from University of Oregon, in an issue brief for the Center for Health Care Strategies, Inc., said, public policy to reward healthy behaviors are emerging as part of a national trend in healthcare toward consumer direction. Consumer-directed healthcare encourages people to take advantage of their health and healthcare by promoting personal responsibility and quality and cost-conscious decision-making. One of such policies that engages Medicaid benefit recipients is the implementation of a health savings account. The dash one language, which contains the portion of the bill dealing with HSAs, was created from the numerous conversations with Dr. Bruce Goldberg, Director of the Oregon Health Authority, and conversations with Senator Dr. Alan Bates. Traditionally, Medicaid agencies have not sought means to influence the behavior of recipients. And we know that emergency room abuse average ER visits costing around $1,500. Obesity and tobacco uses are high amongst those already receiving Medicaid benefits. Lifestyle choices accounts for 40% of the total overall health care cost. And we know that tobacco use in Medicaid benefit recipients in the state of Oregon is over 30%. As we continue to establish a framework for implementation of the Affordable Care Act, and as we address the rise in costs placed upon both state and federal budgets to cover these expenses, we must look to methods that drive down the cost and burden placed upon the state. While creating an environment of personal responsibility, the incentives discussed are techniques to instill within the individual receiving Medicaid benefits. The notion that they own their health and are responsible for their health care cost, the federal government has already asked the states to find means to drive down the cost of health care, including misuse of emergency room facilities. We believe that House Bill 3420-1 begins paving the road for the future. Individual-based cost savings mechanisms. So far, Florida and Idaho have already implemented some type of health savings account. Florida enacted the Enhanced Benefit Account pilot program in 2006, rewarding Medicaid recipients up to $125 a year if the benefit recipient adopted several of their specified illness-healthy behaviors. Idaho implemented their version of the health savings account in 2007 called Idaho Preventative Health Assistance Program. Its main focus was child care, tobacco cessation, and weight management. In Florida, their enhanced benefit account program allows Medicaid recipients to obtain credits to their account for participation in healthy behavior activities defined in their state program. Activities are offered by health plans, community centers, and other nonprofit organizations and partnerships. When Medicaid recipients acquire enough credits, they can use them to purchase additional preventative health products like cough and cold medicine, which would reduce the amount of ER and clinic visits, dental supplies, which should make for better oral health, resulting in less costly dental exams and dental work, first aid supplies, again, in an effort to reduce the amount of ER visits, and a host of other over-the-counter medical supplies. Florida is seeking to create a Medicaid culture where the benefit recipient is more responsible and understands the role of lifestyle choices in preventative health measures and its relationship to costs and savings. Idaho Preventative Health Assistance Program is divided into two portions, the Wellness PHA, which focuses on Medicaid healthy child development, and their Behavioral PHA, which focuses on adult healthy lifestyle changes. In Texas, lawmakers are currently asking the Obama administration to give Texas a block grant for Medicaid, which the state would use to subsidize private health savings accounts for low-income recipients. Medicaid recipients would either enroll in a Medicaid-managed care plan or be given subsidies on a sliding scale based on their income. Texas state legislators would also like to include personal responsibility measures such as higher copays for patients who went to the emergency room for minor ailments. In closing, I believe that upon passage of House Bill 3420-1, we can work together to craft an innovative Oregon solution by customizing the framework to fit our state Medicaid system. We can drive down the cost upon the system, instill personal responsibility, and help people help themselves in regard to their health. Colleagues, when I first started this bill, it basically was just dealing with implementing a co-payment program. And after a lot of conversations that I had at different places, and where we wanted to be was implementing personal responsibility and how do we budget at the state level, because we keep seeing these increased costs. and it's really tough to do. And I've had the idea of an Oregon health card that I've thrown out lots of different times to different groups that I've met with. Everybody understands it and gets it. And that's where the health savings account opened it up for basically our CCOs or the state to operate it, one or the other. But then we can apply, this is how much you have on your card, use it wisely, and these are places where it won't cost you, this is places where you'll have some sort of copay, and start driving personal responsibility. And for us to ever get ahead of the curve on this, I think it's a direction that we need to look at very seriously and look at going. So that's the reason for the bill. I'm open to any questions. We did change the reimbursement rate for the doctors from 110% in the dash ones to 100% because under federal law, we couldn't pay more than what Medicare was paying, but it was basically we'll be reimbursing doctors at the same rate as Medicare, which that should alleviate some of the pain on the private insurance where the cost shifting is going on. So, because that'll be an increase in the reimbursement rate about $10 per RVU. So, other than that, I'm open for questions.
Any questions for Representative Widener? Representative Kettemer.
I suppose it's more a comment. You know, we've been progressing. I've been trying to figure out how in the world we can afford this. You know, and most of our strategy has been predicated upon, in part, personal responsibility by people becoming healthier. And how do you really encourage people specifically to be healthier? You know, I've been fat for most of my life, and it's really hard to lose that weight. I've been making some progress lately. It's a little early to declare success, but, you know, how do we get people to do that? And I appreciate a novel approach. Thank you.
Well, that's kind of what drove it, because I look at myself and you as well, Representative Kettemer, and actually probably everybody on this committee. We all know we need to exercise and do different things, but it's our personal choice and responsibility. And sometimes, I know lots of people, my wife, for example, if she can save $5 to pick something up, well, she might spend $10 in gas to go save that $5. So, and that's what I look at we need to do here, addressing some of the issues with the health savings, is we have people that go to emergency rooms because it's convenient. I haven't had time to get to a doctor because my doctor's 8 to 5, and I'm here 8 to 5. So lots of people are waiting. It'll get too bad, and they put it off where they end up into the emergency room. So we're just going to say you can go to the emergency room, but it's going to cost you $15 if it's a non-emergency for going there. So, and these are things, as we develop the health savings account or as a CCO implements this, they would be able to address those issues the way they saw fit. Because that's really where one of the big abuses is and where we can save a lot of money is just moving people out of the emergency room. Changing people, a person's behavior, lifestyle, that's a little tougher. You know, I'll pay the extra $5 to keep eating my cheeseburger. So even though I know I'm not supposed to do that.
Shame on you.
Because I had a turkey burger today for the first time, and it wasn't by choice. It's because we were out of hamburgers when I got it. So I was forced to eat the turkey burger, so my doctor would be happy to hear that since my cholesterol's high.
And I did it by choice, so.
I haven't called him yet.
All right.
Thank you.
Can we ask John Mullen to come and testify?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, John Mullen with the Oregon Law Center. I think all of the committee members are aware of the mission of the Oregon Law Center of access to justice for low-income communities. In the past, the Oregon Law Center has been very concerned about cost-sharing issues, particularly as it pertained to OHP standard and what that did to the population on OHP standard over time. I just recently had a chance to take a look at the Dash 1 amendments, which substantially changes the bill to begin with. But I would point out that a few weeks back, this committee passed House Bill 2859, including the Dash 8 amendments that creates a task force on individual responsibility. I've stated on a number of occasions that I'm very supportive of the idea of the triple aim. I think it does make sense to look at individual health, community health, focus on quality and looking at cost issues. So I think that if this idea has any merit, it should be discussed in this task force on individual responsibility, and along with other ideas that may come up about how to reinforce individual responsibilities, I think that's the proper place for it. So I would suggest to you, to the committee, that you've already, at least with forwarding House Bill 2859, there's the opportunity for discussions of these types. And that concludes my testimony, Mr.
Chair. Thank you. Any questions?
Actually, Mr. Chair, I have one form, if that's right.
Pardon me?
Just one quick question.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Is what we're after is just seeking a waiver from the federal government, then it would be up to the CCOs or the state to act upon it at that point. So are you saying you wouldn't even want to have that option available for us to go out and seek that waiver at this point?
Mr. Chair, Representative Widener, yes, I think it would make sense in the context of looking at individual responsibilities, a number of different ideas that may come out of the task force itself, to see if this is a priority or the best way to go about underscoring ideas for individual responsibility.
If I may follow up.
Go ahead.
Thing is, task force comes back and then they're waiting another year to 2 years to get the okay to do it. So if they say the individual responsibility is what they want to do, we could have this ready to go for them with the findings that they come up with if we act on it now. Would that not be true?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tyler. Widener, it's also possible the task force on individual responsibility would come up with other mechanisms or other ideas that would gain more support than that particular idea about health savings accounts. I'm not entirely sure. Also, I have to say about other states that have asked for these kinds of waivers. I know you mentioned Texas asking for a block grant in Medicaid. There are a number of things that states are requesting these days that I have no idea of how the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid will rule on these particular issues. But I think this is an idea that's best vetted in a longer discussion, frankly.
Thank you very much. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3420 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2093. Is that right?
No.
Or what? Okay, the new 2020 first?
Yeah.
Open up a public hearing on House Bill 2020. Will you tell us about that bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2020 requires coordinated care organizations accept credentials of mental health treatment providers and chemical dependency treatment providers found by another CCO to meet credentialing requirements and objective quality standards and declares an emergency effective on its passage.
Okay. Do we have a legislator in this one? No?
Nathanson will be in shortly.
Okay, are we going to wait for him? Let me call some witnesses then. Representative Nathanson will be here in a bit. She's next door. Janet Ahrens, Sandy Boyle, and what we got there? Stacy
Bloomberg.
Stacy Bloomberg. Let's start with that. You want somebody else to start?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Well, we agreed which three of us would come up.
I'm sorry. You want somebody else to
yes,
come?
Please.
Come on. This is the last time before a week from Friday that we're going to have a leisurely time for hearing, so make the most of it.
Yes, sir. Thank you. My name is Janet Ahrens. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Alliance of Children's Programs. We represent $205 million worth of services and take care of over 100,000 children each year. This, we are very excited to be here to talk about this bill. House Bill 2020 is a beautiful bill. It's common sense at its simplest form. It creates a win-win situation for all the circumstances and all the stakeholders who are involved. My members have very, very important relationships and partnerships with CCOs in Oregon, and particularly around behavioral health programs and services. And I appreciate, they've made it very clear to me the appreciation they have for that partnership, for the triple aim, and also for some goals to try and achieve savings. This bill helps us achieve those savings in the simplest way. We consider it the bill addresses behavioral health programs for children and for adults. It creates a single agreed-upon standard for credentialing in order to be eligible to be considered for contracting with CCOs, and it creates reciprocity across CCOs so that if a provider's program certifies or credentials with one CCO, then they are good across the board with the other CCOs. One of the pieces that's really nice about this bill is that you've got some quality assurances on the front end. These are providers who are already licensed by the state of Oregon and who are already certified by the Oregon Health Authority to be a behavioral health provider. In addition to that, they might have national credentialing, and they've got a host of other credentialing and reviews and audits and opportunities to be able to demonstrate their competency and their outcomes. The advantage for CCOs is that they still retain a tremendous amount of their local control. So they are not required to contract with anyone, regardless of credentialing. They retain that local control over targeted populations, what services are available, who they want to have deliver the service, who they contract with, what they pay, and what kind of outcomes they get. Now, they have raised some concerns. We've talked with several of the CCOs, we met with DMAP, we met with Dr. Bruce Goldberg from the very beginning. Dr. Goldberg has expressed nothing but enthusiasm for this bill, feeling that it represents exactly the kind of lean approach and cost savings, administrative cost savings that the system could be doing. And we have listened carefully to the comments and questions that CCOs have had. You'll see we're on -4 amendments. And there's likely to be amendments through the administrative rule process that will still be made as we go through the process and do a little bit more of the what if and some cleanup in order to be able to implement the bill. So attached are a number of letters from other providers who are saving gas and your time today by allowing me to bring a letter for them. And I just want to emphasize part of what they're talking about in here is what their credentialing experience is like. One organization was reviewed 6 times in the last 6 months. Each review lasted 3 to 5 days. It took an additional week of staff time for the work, and it diverted services from clients, costing them over $20,000. That's just one example of the kinds of costs and staffing that's required to be able to address credentialing circumstances. And you can see there's some bullets in there that provide examples from other letters that are attached. So the long and the short of it is that we think we have a great opportunity for CCOs to achieve good cost savings for providers, to streamline, and to do what really has an opportunity to be presented as a very common sense efficiency strategy for the system. Thank you.
Let's invite Representative Nathanson to join us, if she can get back next door and keep the Ways and Means process going. I did just see her, didn't I? Yeah.
Oh, there she is.
Please.
Nancy?
I think we're going to, after this panel, suspend this public hearing. We can't work this bill today because we have a couple amendments, and I hope you'll talk about those amendments. And then we'll open up the hearing at the end and spend whatever other time we need on it. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Nancy Nathanson, State Representative from District 13. You've already been hearing about this bill, but I would still like to present my testimony as the advocate and cheerleader for this concept. Mental health and chemical dependency treatment providers for children and adults do go through multiple authorization processes to operate in different CCOs. Multiple processes. This is mostly an unnecessary use of time. It's costly to the providers who are trying to get by on a shoestring to provide the programs that we rely on in our communities. But it adds up to CCO resources as well, using up resources that perhaps could have been used on something else with all the responsibilities that we have given them. I first learned about this, the need to go through multiple credentialing processes, from one of the long-standing, well-revered organizations in my own community. It affects many organizations like Homestead Youth Services in Pendleton, Tillamook Family Counseling, Trillium Family Services in Corvallis, Northwest Human Services in Salem, OnTrack in Medford, LifeWorks, Columbia Care, DePaul, dozens in different places around the state. These organizations are already licensed by the state of Oregon and are certified by the Oregon Health Authority to be a behavioral health provider. There's an additional layer of credentialing then that happens next at the CCO level. In any CCO region where that provider may be having clients. We're not talking about being annoyed because you have to fill out a couple extra forms. We're talking about a credentialing review that can take 2 to 3 days and involve several people. It's a burden for providers in any of our communities across the state. So the bill establishes credential reciprocity so that once the program is, the provider is vetted in one place and found to be qualified, then they will be found qualified by other CCOs. But I want to emphasize the bill is very careful to explain this does not obligate any CCO to contract with any particular provider. It just means you don't have to go through the whole credentialing process again. I want to emphasize, no CCO will be required to contract with any particular provider. I also want to emphasize that this bill does not apply to medical professionals. The discussions about streamlining licensing and credentialing are happening in other venues for those kinds of medical health professionals. This bill doesn't get in the way of that. In fact, I think it's most useful to have this kind of credentialing discussed separately. It's a much easier solution because this is about credentialing programs, providers as programs. This is not about individually licensing or individually credentialing individual practitioners. This is about credentialing a provider organization. It's really different processes. I think it's fine for them to be separate, and I'm actually pretty excited that the processes can be separated because the other discussions have been going on for a while. They're not completed yet, and it's more complex because of all of the independent individual practitioners that need to be addressed. I hope that you have the -3 and -4 amendments. I recommend both of them be adopted.
I know we have -3 and 4, not 6.
And -4 is very simple. It's basically addressing a word or a phrase. So to sum up, I would just like to mention, before I sum up, I want to mention that I have heard a couple of questions that are being raised about this. With regard to negligence or who's responsible or can you trust the credentialing process, the bill does set up a process for the Oregon Health Authority to convene a work group. It's pretty comprehensive in the kinds of people who will be involved in the work group to set up the credentialing process so that it's agreed that they will all understand what's involved in credentialing so that no matter which one did it, it meets certain standards so they can be insured of quality. The other thing I'd like to emphasize is that because each CCO still independently negotiates contracts with providers, they can use their contract language in ways that they already do to influence those things that they know that they need to have authority over, that they need to oversee. This bill does not preempt their ability to manage their own contracts with providers. And that's where some of the concerns should be addressed. That's where they already are addressed, and that's where they would continue to be addressed. So the objective of this bill is to reduce the number of duplicate administrative processes. It will be more streamlined, it will avoid wasting time on unnecessary administrative work, and that therefore will allow providers to spend their resources on providing services to clients, not on more administrative work. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the representative?
Thank you, Representative. It's a good bill.
My intention will be to close this public, or leave it open, but to step back from it till the end of the session. What I hope to do today, when we get done with as much testimony as we have time for, would be to move the 2 and 3 amendments into the bill so we get a final fiscal for it and then carry over until Friday.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. If you two want to continue, that'd be fine if you do it sort of briefly.
Hi, I'm Tia Gray. I'm the CEO of Morrison Child and Family Services. Thank you, Chair and committee members. Thank you for this opportunity to speak with you. I represent an organization that's the oldest, largest child-serving outpatient mental health organization in the state. We serve about 6,000 children and families a year. We primarily work in the three-county area and work closely with both Family Care and Health Share of Oregon. However, we take children from all over the state of Oregon. So you can imagine with separate credentialing processes for each of those CCOs, when we are already in a thinly funded environment, that the amount of hours and time that it takes to do duplicative, redundant licensing and credentialing processes is a burden on the organization. And because of that, it takes dollars directly away from treatment services for children and from the ability to monitor the quality of those programs. And so I am here to support this bill, House Bill 2020, and I hope that you all see fit to pass it. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Stacey Blumberg, and I'm representing DePaul Treatment Centers, where I'm the Director of Marketing and Development. Thank you also for allowing me to speak today in support of this bill. DePaul serves about 2,000 individual clients every year. We have 3 locations in Multnomah and Washington County, and we have 11 different programs that serve adults and adolescents. Last year in 2012, we served Oregon residents from 26 different counties, and that falls within all 15 CCOs' jurisdictions, and therefore we will need to be contracting with every single one of the CCOs. As everybody else here today has testified, the credentialing process is incredibly labor and time intensive, and the credentialing packets often exceed 50 pages in length. And with 11 different programs, you can see that is quite a lot of work for us to do. At this point, even in the early stages of the CCOs, we're already working with 6 different CCOs outside of the 2 main ones in the Tri-County area. So we're already realizing how important it is that we're working with the different counties and the different CCOs. I think everything else is stated by everybody else here, but we really do appreciate your consideration in furthering the triple aim by allowing us to spend more resources serving our clients and treating their addiction and mental health issues. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
No. Yeah, there are more people, so we'll do it later. I'll leave this public hearing open so we get back to it later before we get a work session going. But in the meantime, I'd like to open up a work session on House Bill 2767. Colleagues, you remember that's the bill on the walking workstations? The motion would be to move it to Ways and Means to consider it. And if it's is all right with the committee, we'll do that. Can we have a motion to put on the floor for the discussion?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2767 to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Is there any discussion? Is there anything, Gaia?
Yeah, you know, I think this is a great bill. It's the direction we want to go in. I am concerned about the cost, given that Representative Nathanson, who was just here, is charged with trying to find 2% cut in the human services budget. I will support this bill because I think it's a good message that we continue to look into these kinds of behavioral changes. I hope that the carriers of this bill, the advocates of this bill, will look at ways that they can reduce the cost before they get over to Ways and Means. If there are companies that produce these machines and they can come in and say we'd be willing to be in partnership with the state, I think they would be in a stronger position when it gets to Ways and Means.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's a great bill, but it is an interesting one.
Interesting.
And our job is to talk about policy, not about the fiscal, so it is appropriate for us to say, okay, this policy is worth exploring if you guys can find the money.
No, I think you just said what I was going to say, that by backing the policy of trying to do something to improve health, it gets a discussion on the floor, but it also continues the discussion on financing, because PEB has shown mild interest in this bill, let us look at it type thing, maybe a combination of funding from grant funds. Pew organization called us to do an interview on this bill, so their health group is there, and it may be a combination of some state funding along with some outside grant funding, because we have funding coming in from the feds for doing interesting and different things to move healthcare forward that isn't coming out of the direct patient healthcare budget, but it's innovation money, and so I'd like to keep it alive so that we can continue the discussions, keep looking for an avenue, and that's it.
Is there any other discussion?
I think we should just have units here for February, and we just have a contest with the healthcare committee who can walk through the whole committee.
Yeah.
I'm in favor.
So we have the stations right here. And winner, everybody pitches in $10, winner gets it all.
Are there any rational discussion?
Just trying to make myself some money. Oh. Feeling confident.
Would you please call the roll?
Representative Clem?
Okay, yes.
Representative Conger?
Excused.
Representative Harper?
Aye.
Representative Zimmer?
Aye.
Representative Whiteley?
Aye.
Representative Whitener?
Aye.
Vice Chair Kenny Dyer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson?
Aye.
And Chair Greenlee?
Aye. Motion carries, and the bill is on the way to Ways and Means. Don't say we didn't do anything for that third aim, right? The triple aim mumble jumble.
Yeah.
Let's open up a public hearing on House Bill 2093 and ask Jennifer Woodward to come forward. We have a set of amendments, a gut and stuff amendment. I'd like to hold the testimony to what's in the amendment, because our intention would be to move that, not what was in the original bill. And perhaps Ms. Woodward will tell us the difference between the amendment and the original bill, so we can maybe save a little trouble and deal with the 100 emails we each got on this bill.
Sure, yes, I'd be
please.
Happy to. Thank you. Thank you, Chair Greenlick and members of the committee. My name is Jennifer Woodward. I am the State Registrar for Vital Records in the Oregon Health Authority Public Health Division. And I'm here to support House Bill 2390, and you have a -4 amendment. It was a gut and stuff, and we would like you to adopt the dash four. This is a Vitals of Records Modernization Bill. And it is a very large bill, as you can see. The -4, pretty much what it does is we have communicated with a variety of our colleagues for the past 6 weeks, and it does adopt the changes recommended from the Oregon Funeral Directors Association, the State Archives, the Circuit Courts, the Council of Local Health Officials, as well as address some concerns from the genealogists. The bill itself is large, as I mentioned. It does, 80% of it is current law. So the changes that were made were some minor modifications following the requests from those groups. The main changes particularly addressing the genealogists. The genealogists were very concerned about the fact that we were going to extend the period of how long vital records would be confidential or restricted, and the -4 amendments do not change that. What it does, or extend that, I should say, what it does, it just takes it to what we currently have in law, and what we've had in law since the 1970s is what we have in the -4, and in law right now for restricting the birth records, it's for 100 years after the event, and for death, marriage and divorce, domestic partnership and dissolution of domestic partnership, it's 50 years, and that has been in law since the 1970s. The -4 also removes the language related to redacting cause of death that would be redacted in the public death certificates, and that language has been removed as well. We also made some changes in time frames for divorce certificates. That was the circuit court's concern. We made some changes as well related to the Council of Local Health Officials, the role of vital records at the county level, and the authority that the state has over the county officials. The Oregon Funeral Directors Association, we responded to their request to increase the time frame where funeral directors could order certified copies of the records. And the State Archives also had some concerns about the time frame, and we addressed that as well, same as the genealogists. It's a large bill. As I said, 80% of it is current law, and I'd be happy to answer any questions and highlight things, but I wanted to respect the committee's time. So Representative Greenleg, I'd be happy to answer any questions, and I appreciate the time of the committee.
And we've heard from the archivists that they're okay with
that. Yes.
Yes. Are there any questions? Well, thank you very much. Hang around just in case something come up. Can I call Judith Goldman and Gwen Jones to the stand, please?
Do I understand that the present wording is being retained then?
Yes. My name is Judith Goldman. I live at Hillsborough, Washington County. I am an amateur historian, and I express interest and worry over the extension of the time that was listed in the possible amendments. Now, and I sent an email, one of the many, I suspect, and it covers what I was concerned with, and now realizing that this may stay as it has been in the present law, I defer.
You're okay with the current law?
Yes.
Good. Yes.
My name is Glenn Jones. I live in Portland, Oregon. I'm also an amateur historian and genealogist. The original bill I was against entirely. The purpose of the bill, to my understanding, was to prevent ID theft, and what they're trying to do there would not do anything to prevent ID theft. That's not mainly where ID theft comes from vital records. I've had personal experience with it coming from other areas, such as getting my data from cell phones that are unsecured or cordless phones and that. The changes that have been made, I feel, will suffice and everything.
Good.
I work quite often with Lane Sawyer at the State Archives and with the Oregon Heritage Commission and all that. So, thank you very much for allowing me to testify.
Well, we're happy that you came to testify in our house. And we're also happy that the group was very responsive to the request. I do have a comment, and it's just a comment. You and I have had this discussion. I don't understand why these things are confidential anyhow, but we'll have that discussion of a different day. And I agree. I don't think this is where ID theft comes from, and I think that is interesting. So my concern wasn't the 100 to 125 years. My concern was the 0 to 1 year, but we'll have time to adjust that at a different time.
I just went through 7 years of Bureau of Indian Affairs probate, and if the records had been closed for 125 years, there's a lot of things that I would not have been able to find out. I have a family history that goes back beyond 1829 here in the Northwest.
Well, we all have family histories that go back there. We just don't know what they are. Okay. Are there any other questions of this panel? Thank you very much. I will close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill. I'm having trouble with my eyes today, so I'm having trouble seeing.
2093.
House Bill 2093. Can we have a motion, please?
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the dashboard amendments to House Bill 2093, dated 4-8-13.
Representative Kenny Geyer moves the dash four amendments to House Bill 2073, dated 2093, dated 4-8-13. Is there any discussion on the amendments? It's a complete gut and stuff.
Well, it seems how it's 138 pages.
Jeez.
I can honestly say I haven't been through it.
Well, you'll have plenty of time before it gets to the floor.
Before it gets to the floor.
I think it's probably fair to say none of us have gone all the way through, but most of it's boilerplate. Okay. Is there any objection to the amendment? We have the dash four amendment. We have a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2093 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded.
Representative Kenny Geyer moves House Bill 2093 to the floor with a as amended with a due pass recommendation and that the referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. We have authority to rescind that. And it has a minimum fiscal. Is there any discussion? Would you please call the roll?
Representative Klim?
Aye.
Representative Conger?
Did you read them all? In the
I was halfway through.
Yeah. Representative Conger's excused.
Representative Parker?
Aye.
Representative Kinema?
Aye.
Representative Whiteley?
Aye.
Representative Whitener?
Aye.
Vice Chair Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson?
Aye.
Chair Greenwood?
Aye. Motion carries. Who would like to carry this on the floor?
Want a line-by-line description on the floor, Kerry?
I think if that's what you're planning, we'll get somebody else.
I'd do it shorter than that.
Okay. Representative Kenner, why don't you do it?
I can read them in back now.
Okay. Representative Kenny Geyer, will you tell us what's going on with House Bill 3162 that we're carrying over?
Representative Conger and I have a couple of more small tweaks on the amendments. I think the bill is 99% there, but we would rather, if we can pass it quickly next Monday, we would rather have those small tweaks made.
Will you be replacing the dash threes with full amendments, or should
no.
we?
No, I don't think it'll replace the dash three. Be in addition to the dash three.
Should we?
But we could combine it with the dash three if you prefer.
No, I was just wondering if we should take time and do the dash threes now. Well,
that'd be fine, although he's not here.
All right, well, let's hold that. I already announced that's being carried over. Where are we? We have one more. We're ready to work. Tell us also what's happening with the traditional health care or the non-traditional health care workers.
We are partially waiting on a fiscal on that.
It says waiting on amendment, too.
We did get the amendment.
We got an amendment. We don't have the fiscal. There's one question we want to clarify. But it's very close as well.
I don't have the amendment.
Hmm?
I don't have the amendment.
Okay, we don't have the amendment. We're carrying that over. Carrying over 3407.
Oh, back
right? What?
Yes. Oh, no, we just passed that one.
Oh, did we? Excuse me.
But we kept open. We kept open 3420. No, no, I'm sorry. We kept open.
For those of you that are wondering if we always wander around in the dark like we're doing now, the answer is no, we don't always wander around in the dark, but we are under pressure to get all our bills done before next Wednesday, all the bills that come out of the House. So we have huge agendas, and we keep getting amendments and different paper we need, and it's got us a little bit lost.
Mr. Chair,
so we wanted to do this.
We want to make sure we don't drop anything.
To House Bill 2020.
Yep. Going to confuse you. That's your next step.
We wanted to go back to 2020.
If you want, you could work 3420 and adopt the dash one amendments, and it's good to go.
Yeah. Thanks. What's going on with 3260? Nice, right? We're carrying that over?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So we're going to go back to the 2020. Is that all we have left? I want to make sure we have everything right and everything carried over and worked everything we can work, right? Except this one. Okay. But let's... We still have the hearing open on House Bill 2020, and let's bring, we've got a pretty good time. Attention to hold the rest of the public hearing and then adopt the amendment. Let's see, we have Sandy Boyle, is that right? You help me, please.
Renee Dennis.
Renee Dennis, is that? Would you please? Pardon me?
Renee Dennis.
Come on. Josh Fellows, did he leave? Just here a minute ago. And John Ames, is he here? They're probably out in the hall gossiping. So why don't you go?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I represent a organization that provides a lot of services in the Tri-County area for our outpatient services. So we provide mental health services. We serve over 1,000 kids in a year. And we have a subacute unit, one of two in the state for kids. Yes.
Could you do us a favor and identify yourself for the record, please?
Yes, sir. My name is Renee Darris.
Thank you.
This is my first time, so.
You're doing fine.
Thank you. We have a subacute unit which provides intensive mental health services to kids that are in crisis on a subacute level, so not necessarily a hospital. One of two in the state, and so we pretty much see kids from all over the state that come to us. So that would preclude us to serve kids in every single CCO area that are available. And so the process to credential with each CCO is very cumbersome. A lot of paperwork, like Dave said before, these applications for credentialing can be up to 50, 60 pages long, and a lot of man time goes into it. Our last one took about 20 hours of man time straight for five people at a cost of about $1,500 just for one application, and it took them 6 months to get back to us. So quite a bit of time. And so with that, we're like, okay, if we have to go through this for seven in a year, which we foresee for next year, that's a lot of time spent on doing work that isn't really focused on providing services to the people that we serve, to the kids who are in crisis or kids who need those services out in the community. So we feel that this bill would help us in cutting down time, cutting down expenses, and putting more for our organization towards those kids. So. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Josh?
Yes.
Where's Jonathan? Is he here?
I don't see him.
Okay.
Chair Greenlick, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Josh Ballack. I'm representing the Coalition for a Healthy Oregon today. We wanted to say we really appreciate Representative Nathanson's efforts and intent here. We think that this is a really great step. The one thing that we do have is a couple questions around some clarity issues around the particularly reciprocity issues and also kind of who's on the hook for how the if somebody's screws up and you've got a credentialing on one side and then but they're really being services on the other. So we're working with the Oregon Health Authority on trying to get some clarity around that. And then the other thing is that we believe that there may be something in our contract around the CCOs that we might anytime that we contract with one provider and And we actually have to, and the credentialing is being done by somebody else, we actually have to enter into a specific contract with that other CCO. So you may end up having have each CCO have a contract with each other CCO in order to make this bill work. So it's there's some clarity issues. We think that we can continue working on it. We just wanted to be able to come and get those concerns on the record and hopefully make this an even better bill as we move forward. So with that, I'm willing to take any questions.
Do you have a problem with us moving it forward with the 2 and 3 amendments and get clarity later? Is that?
Well, hopefully we can get clarity as soon as humanly possible. So.
As soon as?
As soon as humanly possible.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Just a quick question.
Yes.
Would you be comfortable if that form that they filled out for the one CCO, if all that information, or there's a packet that just was transferred over to you so you had a copy, or if you grabbed a copy from another CCO so they didn't have to repeat this time and time again?
Chair Greenlick, Representative Widener, I think we like the general intent. I don't think it's necessarily that idea. We like that. It's the other idiosyncrasies that start to go around with it, our contract concerns, who's liable if somebody does get if there's something that goes wrong. It's those types of details that still need to get worked out. So it's, but we do really genuinely appreciate what Representative Nathanson's trying to do, and really appreciate that there is an awful lot of burden on our mental health provider groups, units, providers, and if we can do anything to help that, we want to make sure that that happens.
Jonathan? I'm sorry, who is? Yes, Representative.
This bill, I think, opens an interesting door, because if I've done some of that credentialing before, it's very laborious, very costly. And as we move forward with this CCO system, I think we may want to look at a system that will work across other professions as well. I mean, those CCOs are operating under the direction of the Oregon Health Authority, although they're quasi-independent. And we may want to look seriously at a system where we can do a central registry of these certifications. Because I can't imagine if we have a lot of healthcare specialists in this state that are going to work for many CCOs, because we need them, and we're going to, each CCO is going to credential each one of them with this kind of a man-hour approach. It doesn't seem to make any sense. And I would strongly urge the committee to look at this and figure out a way to make it happen.
Okay.
Representative Greenlick, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jonathan Eames, and I apologize. I was over working on another bill right next door, so I got a bunch of texts saying, John, where are you? So I apologize for being late. And I'm sure everybody has said some really good things beforehand, but I wanted to make sure we had the opportunity to get on the record. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Prevention Education and Recovery Association, otherwise known as OPRA, the statewide association for alcohol and drug treatment facilities, as well as ORPA, Oregon Residential Providers Association, which is residential mental health providers. And House Bill 2020 we see as an excellent tool for mitigating the burdens that alcohol and drug treatment providers, as well as mental health treatment providers, have, in that we're looking at the CCO process on a number of different fronts, looking at 16 different CCOs, if not more, that we have to contract, get certified by. It's a big burden. I mean, imagine some small, not-for-profit that has a very skinny margin being able to allocate the resources to be able to get certified on a number of different levels. That's really the purpose of what 2020 is. I know we have, and I've talked to Mr. Ballack here about some of the details that need to be worked out, and I hope that we can work them out. I'm not the lead on the bill. There's others that are leading on the bill, but we think that the concept and the intent, and we hope this extends into other areas of how we work with the CCOs, because it's, and I know a number of you have some sort of connection to both mental health and alcohol and drug treatment providers. We hope that this concept is transferred to a number of other things when we look at contracting, for example. Are we going to have these small providers contract with 16 different CCOs, have 16 different payment systems, have 16 different ways that they have to find the funding streams? Right now, the funding streams for alcohol and drug and mental health are complicated as it is. So concepts such as House Bill 2020, very good bill, and hopefully we can work out the details so that administrative burden is mitigated. All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Is there anybody else I lost on the witness list on this bill? think we have them all. Okay, thank you very much. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2020 and open a work session on House Bill 2020 for the purpose of adopting a couple of amendments so we get the final paper.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the -3 amendments dated 3/18/13 and the -4 amendments dated 4/9/13 to House Bill 2020.
I'm sorry, what? That's the 3 and the 4s?
Yep.
And the 4s dated which?
4/9/13.
13. Thank you. Representative Kenny Geyer, who's the -3 amendment stated 3/18/13 and the -4 amendment stated 4/19/13 to House Bill 4/9/13 to House Bill 2020. Is there any discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Yep.
I'm almost a little hesitant on doing it because I think we're Thompson actually hit the nail on top of the head, but I wonder if the Oregon Health Authority, they just all shouldn't get licensed there, and then the CCOs, these are the people that are licensed here, we have the responsibility for them, and then CCOs just use them, then they only have one place to go to.
Oh, perhaps you can begin to work on a bill for the interim so we can, I think,
because this is going
to
be bigger than
some way to do all professionals makes a lot of sense to me, but
yeah.
Let's get one piece done and we can figure out how to do it.
I would argue to move this forward because it gives us a model. If we can make this work as the bill is intended, then we can add in everybody else or everybody we want to add in to a system. But it would be advisable probably if the bill passes to let the people in the rules and design phase know that get ready because this isn't the end of the line. And we can look at this bigger issue. But I just can't imagine the number of man hours we're going to waste on credentialing that could be given over to providing medical care when we need the people. And if you can reach into a central depository for somebody who has a special mental health or any other specialty that you need for a patient, and this isn't contract with those people, it just says they're qualified to work in your CCO. So that would give you a list of people that are pre-qualified that you could then contract with. I think it's a win-win.
Okay. Are there any objections to the amendment? -3 and -4 are added to House Bill 2020, and we'll close the work session on House Bill 2020. Everybody, I got to tell you, if you have any more amendments on any of these House bills, if we don't have them by Friday, then either the bill's dead or the amendments are dead, one or the other.
Can I just say something real quick? We have next Wednesday on hold for the Consumer Protection Committee at night as well. Is there another night that we can choose if they need us to come over, like Tuesday?
Telemedicine was sent to a CCO.
Well, we won't
post that by the 8th.
A person doing telemedicine reach into a CCO if they're not contentful in that CCO.
We have to post it.
We're establishing minimum common data standards.
It's the nature of the beast.
Thursday, it's got to be done by Thursday.
Thursday, but we can't post any Thursday. But what we can do is carry over Wednesday to the later time of that day. So that's really the only option we have. But the answer is, let's get it all done beforehand. Let's get those amendments and get it done.
3420 with the -1 amendments ready.
Yeah, right.
But when you hear
it, so anytime.
Thank you. We are carrying over House Bill, just for the record, to get everything, make sure we're straight. We're carrying over for a public hearing and a possible work session, House Bill 3345, and the following bills for work sessions. 3260, 3407, 2020, 3162. That will give us how many bills for Friday?
You mentioned 3407.
Yeah, I did. For the remaining 3 days, we have 32 bills. Representative Widener is petitioning for 33.
And someone told me earlier today that there are 600 fiscals backed up for 4 people to process or something like that.
This is going to be fantastic.
I'm better than the LFO today.
Love that.
We're adjourned.
Alrighty.
Wow, that was pretty good, actually. Yeah.